is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, March 4th, 2020. I'm Buster Olney, back in Bristol at the board, Taylor Schwenk, and Troy Farkas. Well, Christian Yelich of the Brewers is closing in on an extension worth $190 million. In the end, he'll be under team control through the 2028 season. 9 years and $215 million. We'll be talking about that with Tim Kurkjian. We'll also be talking with him about the Red Sox situation with Chris Sale. They're bracing themselves for bad news. They sent information to Dr. James Anders yesterday after Sale experienced soreness in his pitching elbow. Brian Cashman, the Yankees general manager, was on SportsCenter yesterday talking about the injuries to Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge.
And Judge, we're still running through a car wash of testing to you know, just rule out that there's nothing serious going on. He's been responding extremely well to the, you know, manual therapy programs that, have been implemented since the complaint he had. So, we're optimistic right now that, you know, he's still in play for us.
Cashman on SportsCenter also talked about the Astros scandal.
Disappointed that, you know, the industry's had to go through this because of, you know, what was, you know, transpiring down in Houston, you know, but it's time to move forward. I think Rob Manfred, our commissioner, is, you know, doing the best he possibly can given the circumstances. And, you know, it's hard to let go of the past, but, you know, our job now is to deal with the present and the future as we move forward. We have a window of opportunity with the team and the talent we have. And, you know, I can't, you know, afford, and Aaron Boone can't afford any distractions about, you know, looking back. It's about looking forward for us now, you know, despite being angry and the, and what it transpired and all the teams that it potentially robbed themselves of glory, so to speak. You know, I can't turn that clock back now, so we just have to move forward and try to take care of business now.
Big question around the Atlanta Braves is, can they make up for the lost offense with Josh Donaldson having signed with the Minnesota Twins? And one of the candidates to replace him, Austin Riley, who had a good day on Tuesday.
And Austin will step in with a runner at first. Two down. Riley's 0 for 2. He's got a ground out and a strikeout on his ledger today. They still hold him on over there. There he goes. Pitch swung on and belted. Deep left center field. How far is that one going? Off the scoreboard. Austin Riley, touch them all. 2-1 Atlanta.
Woohoo! Woohoo for Joe Simpson. A fun call on the Braves radio network. For us, Tuesday was an all-access day before the Red Sox and Yankees exhibition. Matt Viskirjan was on with Golic and Wingo talking about the access to players.
I think it's a pipe dream during the regular season. Do you remember when Will Ferrell had his little gallivant through the Cactus
yes.
League a few years
yeah.
ago?
Yeah.
And it was so much fun. It was great. It was loose. It was light. There were actually people back then, and he was doing it for charity. There were people back then that were screaming about ruining spring training and the integrity of competition. Like, we got to relax a little bit with this stuff.
During the exhibition, Alex Rodriguez, my colleague on Sunday Night Baseball, addressed the Astros scandal.
I think the one thing that really has upset the fans is you cheat, you win a championship, there is no suspension, and then there's no remorse. And the last one, I think, is probably the worst one, because people want to see remorse. They want a real, authentic apology, and they have not received that thus far. And I can just tell you this, Matty, from a guy who has made, you know, as many mistakes as anybody on the biggest stage, I served the longest suspension in Major League Baseball history. You know, it cost me well over $35 million. And you know what? I deserved that. And as a result, I came back. I owned it after acting like a buffoon for a long time. I had my apologies, and then I went dark. And I wanted my next move to be contrite, but I also wanted to go out and play good baseball and change my narrative. And the way you change your narrative is you have to be accountable. You've earned all this negative talk. You've earned whatever comes your way, including whether it's hit by a pitch or negative press. You have divorced yourself from having the ability to protect yourself.
Now, before we get to Tim, I want to tell you that support for Baseball Tonight comes from Capital One Walmart Rewards Card. With a Capital One Walmart Rewards card, you'll earn unlimited 5% back at Walmart online. That's 5% back at Walmart online when you grab new shades for your beach trip, new boots for your hiking trip, or noise-canceling headphones when you need some vacation me time. You'll also earn 2% in Walmart stores, restaurants, and travel, and 1% everywhere else. When you want all that, you need the Capital One Walmart Rewards card. What's in your wallet? Terms and exclusions apply. Capital One, N.A.
Seam heads rejoice.
Noon alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirkjian on Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirkjian covers baseball for ESPN. Tim, where are you today?
I am at Mets camp. We have an all-access day, Cardinals and Mets, at 6:15 this morning. I got a ride to the ballpark with a polar bear. Pete Alonso was great. He gave me some deer jerky to start the trip, and then he told me all about his days hunting. He told me about fishing with you, which was hilarious, and it was just a really nice inside look at who Pete Alonso is. I think I asked him maybe one baseball question. The rest was about his dog and his car and Yellowstone Park. It was great deal of fun. He's a great kid and a great hitter. So that's where we're starting, and then we're going to have him mic'd up today, as well as a few other guys. So if we don't have fun today, Buster, we need to go get another job.
All right, what did you hear about me fishing with him?
Well, it was mostly about him fishing with you. I saw the clip of you fishing and kissing fish and all that stuff. It was good, and it's going to run today, so... I was really impressed with how good a fisherman you are. But you grew up on a farm, and you know you milk a cow. So I guess if you can milk a cow, you can catch a fish.
Well, I got to tell you that, and Pete was great, and that was so much fun that day. We caught so many fish, and he's like, "Yeah, you got to throw it out there." It started out with him saying, "Hey, did you bring a pair of shorts to go fishing? Because you're on a boat," and I hadn't. And then I thought, you know what? I'm kind of a fish out of water, so to speak, in that situation. I'm just going to go with a khaki. So completely dressed fisherman that day. And then the thing that got me, and next time I see him, I'm going to tell him this, I'm ready to throw my line in, and I'm not very good at this, but I definitely wanted to do it myself. And Tim, he was like the overbearing dad. He kept grabbing the fishing pole out of my hand, said, "Here, you do it like this." And he flicks his wrist, and it goes like 15,000 yards. Further than I could have ever done it, but I wanted to do it myself.
Well, Buster, believe me, you're going to get crushed on the air today for wearing khakis on a fishing trip, okay? This has already been discussed. And yes, I can see Pete Alonso telling you, no, that's not how you do this. He's really good at outdoorsy stuff, which is
yes.
Makes him the complete opposite of me, by the way.
And generally me. I mean, it really was. I mean, he is great at that, and I'm really not that good. But I'm better than you. That makes me feel a little bit better. All right, so we heard from our friend Alex Rodriguez yesterday. Tim, I got a preview of what he was going to say on air about the Astros in our production meeting on Monday. And I think he's dead on that, really what it comes down to is that if the Astros players right away had come out and shown remorse, shown complete contrition, that this perception of them would have been so different. I was talking to one of the Red Sox players yesterday, and this player cut it down to the absolute core. He said this was a player-on-player crime. This was a player taking something, group of players taking something away from other players. That's why everybody's so upset. And as Alex said, we haven't heard the absolute contrition and regret and remorse for what they took away from other players.
Yeah, that was one of his strongest statements that I've heard him say since he came to work for us. And for the most part, I agree. And I totally agree that this is the biggest player on player crime that I've seen in the 40 years that I've covered. But I saw the Astros yesterday. And interestingly, I had someone kind of associated with the team tell me that the Astros are so angry now with the way they've been treated, granted, it's all their fault, and the reaction to them, that now they have a chip on their shoulder, and they're really angry about it, and they're going to go out and show everybody, go ahead, scream at us, hate us, disrespect us, we're going to beat you anyway. And this guy told me, and this guy is a reputable guy, told me this might actually work out for the Astros for the good, not for the bad. I disagree. I think this is going to be a major distraction. And even though I think they're going to make the playoffs because they're really good still, this is going to be a difficult year, and they might have a chip on their shoulder, but I don't think it's going to help them. I think it's going to hurt them more than anything.
Tim, how are the players with you?
Well, I didn't get to see too many of them because it was a road game, so I wasn't exactly in the Astros clubhouse. I was in Jupiter, but I watched them play, and I will tell you also, Buster, there was less booing in the crowd, less hate in the crowd than I expected. There was, you know, firm booing for, you know, some of the guys, Springer mostly, and Bregman, but it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. So maybe, for the Astros' sake, I guess, they're starting to turn the corner a little bit, and the hate is slowly disappearing.
All right, you are a glass half full guy, and so I'm going to give you a choice. Do you want to address some good news, or do you want to talk about bad news?
All right, well, let's get the bad news over with.
All right, so before the Red Sox and Yankees exhibition yesterday, Ron Renneke told reporters that Chris Sale, after throwing 15 pitches in a bullpen session on Sunday, arrived in Red Sox camp Monday and said that his elbow was sore, and they sent him out for an MRI. That imaging was forwarded to Dr. James Andrews yesterday. Tim, we didn't get the final word from the Red Sox on what exactly is going on with Sale's elbow. It would shock no one if we heard an announcement today that Chris Sale needs Tommy John surgery. What do you think?
Well, it's inevitable, you would think. With that delivery, that body type, that violent of the stuff, it's only a matter of time before something serious happens to this guy. He is such a great competitor that I'm sure this must have been bothering him at some point. But yesterday, all indications were this is terrible news for him and the Red Sox. I don't know if it's Tommy John, but it sure sounds like it. And if we hear that today, that's just another crushing blow for the Red Sox. I mean, they weren't going to make the playoffs even with Chris Sale at his best, but this is going to change again the entire look of that team if their best pitcher is going to miss the season. Now they're down to Eduardo Rodriguez and Nate Eovaldi, and then they're going to have to figure it out from there. And that's just not any way to compete in a division that has the Yankees and the Rays.
And nice timing by me. At 7:45 in the morning, an article was posted that I wrote, 8 reasons to why the Red Sox are going to be better than what you expect. And one of the reasons was Chris Sale feels really healthy this spring. That got outdated in a hurry. Some other news that wasn't good either. Coming out of Yankees camp, Brian Cashman said out loud that it would be unrealistic to expect that Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge are going to be ready at the start of the season. We did hear later that there is a lot of optimism around Judge now, that they feel like he's turning the corner physically. But let's face it, you know, the big question around these two guys is how much can they stay on the field?
Yeah, and let's not forget, Buster, which everyone knows, that he played virtually all last year without Severino and Stanton, and Judge missed a significant portion of time, and they still won over 100 games. And now that's not to say that all those other guys, the Urshelas of the world, are going to come out and be great again, which was the key to the Yankees last year. But this is bad news no matter how you look at it. And when you have two guys that big, we've been over this, Buster. This is not a game for a big man, especially a position player. It just leads to more injuries, it seems. And let's hope for everyone's sake that Aaron Judge especially is healthy, because he's such an important guy to that team and to the game. And I don't think he and Stanton are hurt that badly, and let's hope not, because baseball is better when the best guys are on the field, and hopefully this won't be too long for the Yankees for the good of the game.
And the good news from yesterday, Christian Yelich working toward an extension with the Milwaukee Brewers, an additional 7 years worth about $190 million on top of the 2 years and $25 million or so that he's owed under his existing contract. I think this is a great compromise for both sides. Tim, the Brewers get a franchise player locked up really for the rest of his career at what's a good rate for a mid-market, small-market team like the Brewers. And for Christian Yelich, you know, 2 years away from free agency, he gets guaranteed a big chunk of money.
Yeah, again, this is good for everyone, Buster. That guy has been basically the best hitter in the National League for the last 2 years, and there's no reason to think, given those incredible bat-to-ball skills that he has, that he's going to slow down as a hitter anytime soon. He is in the physical prime of his career. He gets better every single year. He's great in the clubhouse. He's a great kid. And this is just what the Brewers need for everyone there, including their fans, to say, look, we've got the best player on our team moving forward and one of the best players in the game. And for him, this is tremendous. Just a couple years ago, he was trapped in Miami. Now he's in a winning situation, and he's going to get paid a lot of money. And in this day and age, this is an affordable contract for the Brewers, and yet a really, really nice upgrade for Yelich.
And in a sense, they're getting what they had hoped they would get when they signed Ryan Braun to a long-term deal. Of course, Ryan Braun's value to the franchise is really undercut when he was suspended for PEDs. Well, Yelich now moving forward becomes the face of the franchise. The last one for you yesterday, Tim, behind the batting cage at the Yankees facility, I saw Brian Cashman, their general manager, walk up to Heim Bloom, head of baseball ops for the Red Sox, and they greeted each other with a tap of the elbow. And they talked about how now everyone has this hyper-awareness, increasing hyper-awareness of the coronavirus. I'm hearing more and more about it from teams, among players. What about you?
Yeah, I'm really sensing some concern out there. Talk about people don't shake my hand anymore. They fist bump me, no matter who they are, it seems like. And I think that's just an indicator of where we are right now. And I know there has to be some concern in baseball, given the season hasn't even started yet. We don't even know where this thing is going. I know all sorts of people around the game are being extra cautious. Our Jeff Passan had a story about what the Pirates are doing, scrubbing their clubhouse to try to do everything you can to keep this away. My guess is, and it's a guess, the baseball season will not be affected by this. Boy, I sure hope that I am right, because otherwise it's a very, very bad situation.
All right, Tim. Thanks for doing this. Have fun today. Please don't make fun of me too much.
Well, I will not be making fun of your pants, but Eduardo will, okay?
Before we move on to Todd, a little bit of advice for you, fair listener. Please check out Sports with Katie Nolan, a podcast that always starts with a question. This week, they stay with me here. They did an entire episode, a March Madness-style bracket of food descriptors. Good example, glazed versus spicy. They talk through the entire thing and eventually declare a winner. I imagine it's a lot funnier than the way I just described it, so you should definitely check it out. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Now on to Todd.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz, a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world, or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, what's going on?
Buster, the crocuses, they're emerging through the fallow earth. Signs of spring are in the air. Pitchers and catchers, full squads, all kinds of good things. It's been a while, and it's good to be back.
Yeah, I wish I could have the sound of birds in the background, but instead you're hearing the cars on Cypress here in Tampa. Sorry about that. Now, before we get to this week's quiz, let's dig into the first of weekly conversations about something that we all love. Ballparks. And every week we're going to present one ballpark or another ballpark. Let's start today with Citi Field.
Yeah, and I love the idea of this topic, and I think it's going to be a great one all season long. Ballparks are just chock full of memories for each and every one of us, no matter where we grew up, no matter what team we root for, no matter our age. And Citi Field, Buster, it is, you know, it's been around a little while. I gave some thought to this, and the fact that it opened in 2009 is kind of an astounding thing. But I'll tell you what, Citi Field, I think, does a lot. It's hard to impart a sense of place when you have a ballpark in the middle of a parking lot, a la Citi Field. but I actually enjoy the game experience there very much. If you remember that first year that it opened, it was very un-Mets looking, very black. They corrected that very, very quickly. couple of things I'm going to tick off that I do like about Citi Field. I love walking around the entire thing and watching a game from different vantage points. I love the Shea Bridge out in center field. I think it's kind of a signature component that you really wouldn't know about unless you attended a game there. There are views of the New York City skyline here and there from out in center field. And I will say I love the Mets Museum, which is just to the right of the entrance when you come in through the rotunda. It looks Mets-like. We're going to get a Seaver statue in there. I give Citi Field a thumbs up. Maybe not the most classic ballpark when we close our eyes and we think of the Fenways and Wrigley's and Dodger Stadiums of the world, but it gets the job done.
Yeah, I remember when it opened, there was a lot of conversation, on social media among some fans about, you know, why when the Mets opened their ballpark, is there such devotion to the Brooklyn Dodgers and to Jackie Robinson in particular? Well, that's because of Fred Wilpon, their owner, who grew up a Brooklyn Dodger fan. I love that part of that ballpark.
Yeah, I agree, and I recall that as well. And I think, you know, there are certain Mets fans who, you know, of a certain age who were Dodgers fans many, many, many years ago when the Dodgers left Brooklyn. And they said, why are we building an homage to Walter O'Malley out here in Queens? Because he left us. But the Jackie Robinson tribute when you go in there, is really very moving. I think that rotunda provides a great focal point. And again, it's a ballpark in the middle of a parking lot. There is very little streetscape. There's no context for it. So if you're going to do anything, I guess why not Ebbets Field? And really, Buster, it's, Citi Field came along at a point where we're still on the retro bandwagon. I think we've broken away from that a little bit. The Nationals Park, which we'll be talking about along the way, would be an example of a stadium that doesn't look like that. You know, SunTrust Park, or excuse me, Truist Park, I guess, in Atlanta is another one. But yeah, it has a very strong Ebbets Field vibe, and that is the first thing you notice when you walk in the door.
So this morning I sent out a tweet asking Mets fans for some input, what their favorite spot is, or to give some ideas of favorite places in the ballpark. Al sent us any of the Carvel ice cream stands where they have old Mets helmet cups.
Nice.
Todd Lemieux agrees with you. He said center field before the game, the porch during the game, the rotunda after the game. And Steve Hirsch sent this in. He seems to reflect the perspective of a lot of Mets fans I know who just can't quit the team despite moments of frustration. He wrote, Todd, the exit.
All of a sudden, I'm thinking about Spike Lee in the context of the Knicks here, Buster. I don't know. It seems to be something in the air in New York. I think that as we progress through each ballpark, we should give a little shout-out to what came before. So I would be remiss if I didn't mention Shea. Shea was the site of the first Major League game I attended when I was a little kid. Memories are still fresh there for a lot of people. We often got in the waning years of Shea Stadium. It's a dump, but it's our dump. And again, ballparks are all about memories. People had memories of the 69 and 86 World Series victories with Shea. What's your memory of Shea, Buster?
The slowest elevator in the history of sports. Because from my perspective, is as a reporter trying to meet deadline, and if you got on the elevator, you were going to miss your deadline. So you'd have to run down the ramps through the crowds to get to the clubhouses. Let's face it, our perspective is completely selfish. Mine certainly is. All right, let's get to this week's quiz.
All right, here we go. A new year, a new quiz. In 2020, the San Diego Padres will once again be clad in brown and yellow. So here's this week's question. Why did they select brown in the first place? Was it A, because Franciscan friars of old California wore brown robes? Was it B, as a signal of respect for the coffee culture that San Diego was known for when the team was launched? Is it C, because their founding owner was fond of wearing brown suits? Or is it D, because the original minor league Padres wore brown? Franciscan friars, a respect for coffee culture, the founding owner wore brown suits, or the minor league Padres wore brown. Why?
I tell you what, and I feel like an idiot because I don't know this for sure. I'm going to guess C, okay? And I know it's a bad guess. That's my guess. Taylor, what do you got in your first attempt at the quiz?
I can see why you would select C. That sounds like a very vain thing that an owner would do, but I'm going to go with A, with the shout out to the Franciscan friars.
Buster has drawn first blood here in 2020 yes. because the original owner of the Padres was involved in the steel industry. He wore brown suits. I guess there was a lot of paint all over the place, and they adopted it in his honor. So, wow, what a start.
There we go. All right, Taylor, you know, you know what? You know what you're in for, okay, when you're going up against me. But Todd has a way of tricking me, so just take heart on this. Todd, great to talk with you again. Thanks for signing on for another year of the quiz.
All right, guys. It was great to be here. I'm really looking forward to the 2020 season.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Wednesday. First up, we got Brian Simpson at bsimp120274. He writes in, who do you think, will make a bigger impact on their team as a free agent signing, Madison Bumgarner or Edwin Encarnacion?
Madison Bumgarner, no question about it. The Diamondbacks needed a veteran starter guy who's going to suck up a lot of innings, and I think he's going to do that for them.
Jason Amico at Jason Amico writes in, did you see the Gabe Kapler abruptly ended in-game interview with John Miller during a recent Giants spring training game? He says, I think it showed intensity, and those manager interviews are often invasive and unnecessary, especially during the regular and postseason. What did you think of it? Is there any similar incident that comes to mind? And I guess it kind of plays into the all-access stuff. How do you feel about these mid-inning interviews overall?
Yeah, I did not see that exchange between them. I'm sure that, and I've, you know, worked with Gabe for a long time, talked to Gabe for a long time. I'm sure that it was just a case where he had to address something that was going on in the game. And he may have been abrupt only because the timeliness of what he needed to talk about. Look, I like him. There are times when there's not much going on and they can come off as benign. As someone who's done a billion of those interviews, there are times when they feel dry. And on the other hand, like I remember talking to John Farrell right after Ryan Dempster hit Alex Rodriguez in the first inning on purpose. And that it was an important moment to talk to his manager and to get their perspective on what goes on. So I think it's a trade-off. I think the access is important.
Alrighty, P.K. Steinberg, our boy P.K. Steinberg. How lopsided does the Chris Archer for Austin Meadows and Tyler Glasnow trade look now? Does it approach what the Brewers gave up in exchange for Yelich?
Yeah, in the case of both trades, P.K., I remember when those deals were announced, like immediately hearing from folks with other teams, like, what in the world were they thinking? What were the Pirates thinking when they made that trade? Right away, people loved the deal for the Rays, and the same thing happened with the Brewers trade. I think the frustration over the Brewers trade was they felt like that the Marlins didn't really go to every team and go through a thorough process to see what the best possible deal was, because folks with other teams were telling me right away that they would have offered more. If they had gotten the opportunity. They didn't feel like they had the opportunity to sort of weigh in on a possible deal.
I'm going to call an audible on you. One last one here. I Miss Baseball at MattRat103 writes in, is Yelich's contract extension an even better deal for the Brewers than their trade for him? Mike Trout will make $200 million by $225 on his current deal, and he and Yelich are the same age.
Yeah, I think it's a fair deal for both sides because, let's face it, for the Brewers to take on that contract, $190 million guaranteed, that's risky for a big market team, or at least there's some risk in that. And they didn't have to do that deal. They could have waited two more years. So I do think that in these type of situations, there's got to be compromise on both sides, and there was in this case.
Alrighty, that'll do it for Bleacher Tweets for today. As always, please remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We got the NL West divisional preview coming up tomorrow, AL Central next Tuesday, and the NL East next Thursday.
And that's it for today. My thanks to Tim, to Troy, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/PodCenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.